One of the four ain't bad. Another day, another potential arbitration case settled beforehand. This time, it's former Leaf Connor Brown and the Ottawa Senators agreeing on a three-year deal. Meantime, the offseason tour continues. The Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning and the Boston Bruins are today's focus. It's the Thursday edition of Hockey Central here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Nick Alberga joined alongside Gord Stellick and Justin Bourne today. Many thanks to Matt Marchese, Dylan Brown, and Lance Kennedy for their continued efforts behind the scenes. In mere moments, we'll see how the party is going down in Tampa. Lightning TV analyst Brian Engblom will drop by. Plenty of work certainly still ahead for Julian Brisebois and company here in the offseason. And Joe Haggerty from BostonHockeyNow.com will come by in about 30 or so. Weirdly, lots of questions surrounding the Boston Bruins here as we head into the next season, whenever it does start. But guys, let's start there. And Gord, we'll start with you. Connor Brown, a three-year extension, a total of $10.8 million.
Yeah, and you know, I have a friend who's an arbitrator, and he was slated to do three of these arbitrations. They still get 60% of their fee that they settle. So I just so you know that, they're pretty happy about those deals. Connor Brown took, Nick, a bit of a, I don't like using the word haircut, but he did get 20 goals with the Leafs, and he really wanted to be a part of it. So he fit in 3 years at $2.1 million, then got traded. And he goes to Ottawa last year with 17 goals. And, you know, with all that they're doing, rebuilding and tooling, you know, they had to go get a guy like Dadonov. They had to get a goaltender like Matt Murray, you know, did a few things that way. But this was the kind of guy you had to show that you wanted to keep. And I'm glad they worked it out before. It's a little bit backloaded, so this year of uncertainty, it's a little less cash, which is better for the player. But I really like this guy. His dad is a preeminent developer of kids as well, as far as coaching goes. So it's a great on and off the ice fit for the Ottawa Senators.
I totally agree, and I think it's hilarious that Connor Brown signs a deal, and yet everybody seems to be trending now on Twitter, including Kasperi Kapanen, Connor Brown, and others. Justin, your thoughts on this, and your thoughts on agents throwing out numbers and saying, hey, this guy took a bit of a haircut, because we saw that yesterday with Ilya Mikheyev, didn't we?
Yeah, well, I think there's you know, going to be some situations in the coming weeks and maybe in the coming years where the reality of financial constraints, both salary cap and just, you know, internal cap issues, are going to lead to players having to take less money than they ever have been before, and what will be perceived as bad deals. And I think in those instances, you're going to see some agents, you know, trying to turn that into a favorable outlook on their players, saying they're doing something for the good of the team, but also trying to save face a little bit. You know, these are guys who, their job is to get these guys as much money as possible, and it doesn't look great when they get them, you know, lower numbers than most people expected them to get. You know, just quickly on the Brown deal, I think it speaks to what DJ Smith wants Ottawa to represent, is these hardworking, well-rounded players who, you know, can play offensively, but also have a commitment on the defensive side of the puck. So very much a DJ Smith type of player. Love the deal for Ottawa.
It's tremendous, Gord and Justin, the fact that I remember, obviously, Connor Brown as a rook. I had a T-shirt with all the rookies of the Maple Leafs, and I look up, and he's 26, coming off a 16-goal season, 43 points in 71 games. I agree with Justin, Gord. I think Connor Brown's integral to the success of that team going forward.
Yeah, and isn't it strange with Kapanen gone, you know, and those moves that way, and Janssen gone, that they scored 20 goals 2 years ago. Like, that template that you would have thought in 2020, what are we talking about, the Toronto Maple Leafs, Connor Brown and those guys would be a part of it. They were really working hard trying to fit those guys in, and now they've had to go in a bit of a different direction. So, you know, you're right on the Ottawa side. It's just, we can't really give any more accolades about it, but it's interesting. The Leafs did bring in Eric Joyce today from the Florida Panthers, who was at one point the heir apparent to be the GM. And he gave Aaron Ekblad that $7.5 million contract over 8 years, 1 month after Lou had signed Morgan Riley to the $5 million contract. And that is one that, Justin, that has been the bane of existence for other GMs, because agents always use that as a comparable.
Yeah, you never want to be the guy who sets up the comparable, you know, for agents to use. That's probably not a great picture, but certainly a good addition to the Leafs in that I think this is a guy who, you know, was a smart person, well respected as someone who could become a GM around the league. And this is where the Leafs seem to be using their financial might, is bringing good people into the organization where other teams might be hesitant to spend that money. You know, these are full-on, well-paid, salaried people, and the Leafs have continued to add to their R&D departments, and there are some places where they're going to have advantages as salary caps and budgets get tighter around the league.
Well, with Eric Joyce now in the mix, let's spearhead those Mackenzie Weegar trade rumors once again. We'll save that for later on in the show, but let's bring in now Lightning TV analyst Brian Engblom to break down the offseason or lack thereof so far here for Julian Brisebois and company. Brian, thanks so much for doing this. What's the last month or so been in the party atmosphere there?
Well, I think they're finally settling down. And that's probably a good thing. There's only, you know, you can only go at it so long, I think, and everybody deserves it, especially, you know, when you work so hard to get to the end and all the energy and everything. Pretty much your top players are inside out, right, by the time it's all done. And certainly I think that was the case for the Lightning players. They've enjoyed themselves. I think a lot of them have dispersed at this point, and things have quieted down a little bit. And, of course, they're watching the Tampa Bay Rays in the World Series. So people shift their focus pretty quickly, don't they?
Well, they do. And, you know, it's interesting, Brian, that because of the unusual circumstances, it almost, I remember there was a 30 for 30 about the Detroit Pistons, and they hadn't thought it through that on the day when the Pistons had a parade was the NBA expansion draft, and Rick Mahorn was a Minnesota Timberwolf while he's riding in the float, right? And Tampa Bay almost is experiencing that, because there's just this accelerated UFA period that they got to celebrate hard, but all of a sudden Shattenkirk's gone, Bogosian's gone, you know, reality's coming in with Tyler Johnson, that wow, you're just having a party. And at the party, you're wondering if you're going to be a part of it next year.
Yeah, I think that must have been a strange feeling for sure. But I'm pretty certain that the talk, you know, in between games and leading even into the restart when the playoffs began, I think that was part of the conversation. I mean, these guys are not stupid. They're all very aware. They knew the team was not going to look anywhere near the same next year, no matter what. So, you know, the core group has been together here for a long time. And, you know, Tyler Johnson's name, for example, you know, it was no secret for him. And he's wondering, you know, are these my last games? This is my last shot, certainly with this team. You know, it adds extra flavor to it. It adds an extra impetus to the team to win it, you know, while the group is together, because they've been through a lot, going all the way back to 2015 when they got to the finals and lost to Chicago. And, you know, been to the conference finals, what, four times in 6 years? The core group has been together and accomplished a lot, but didn't accomplish everything. So I think it meant a lot. And so now, yeah, they, you know, partied hard for a few days or a week or whatever it was. And then, yeah, they realize that because everything is so upside down here in a time frame, that the GMs have to work very quickly. And all that stuff started to happen right away. Bogosian will be missed. Even though he was here for a short time, did a hell of a job. And you can't say enough about Kevin Shattenkirk. What a terrific guy. I myself was very impressed with Kevin. You know, I knew him a little bit professionally, of course, over the years. Always very approachable. But when you see him, you know, more day-to-day basis, and you get to know him a little bit more, aside from what he, you know, did for the team on the ice, he will be missed too, for sure. He had a very big impact on this team.
Brian, one thing that I've been working on the past couple days for an article is just about the Chicago Blackhawks and their, you know, after their multiple Stanley Cups, and they had sort of a messy few years here trying to, you know, stay afloat and keep the cup window open, then eventually saying they're doing a rebuild. What can Tampa Bay do to keep their window open here? They're up against it with some contract problems. What do you see as options for them to keep this window open as long as possible?
Well, I think, you know, they have a really good, solid core of players, and it starts with the goaltender. Vasilevsky is wrapped up for multi-years, so that's a terrific start. You know, watching him every day is a real treat. He's a committed player. You know, there's no gamble in Vasilevsky when it comes to a long-term deal. You know, sometimes you wonder when you see or hear players, right, and you think, geez, you know, is this going to be a good call or not? And I think that, you know, for him, because he is so dedicated to his craft and is so talented. I think it's great. You got Victor Hedman, you got Steven Stamkos, and you've got Brayden Point, Kucherov, some of the best talent in the league. And yes, they've got some other guys that they have to sign and take care of. And that's messy right now. And, you know, Julian Brisebois didn't pull any punches going into the season. He knew that it was going to be, you know, a difficult process all season long. And he made the moves that he thought he needed to, and they turned out to be terrific at the trade deadline. And the team won. So you can't ask for anything more than that. And so they move on. Obviously, you look at the Tyler Johnson situation, you see how difficult it is right now to move players because there are so many teams that are up against the edge, you know, on the cap, and that makes it very difficult. And so the buyers can be very patient, and that certainly shows. Tyler Johnson, I think, would be front and center in that situation, having gone through waivers. Now, you know, this is going to play out. How, I don't know. I'm as interested as you guys are. They certainly have got a lot of work to do.
No doubt about that. And Julian Brisebois, very coy and chill, a la Steve Yzerman, who taught him very, very well, you would think, with Brian Engblom here, Lightning TV analysts Nick Alberga, Gord Stellick, and Justin Bourne. And everybody's just wondering when the purge will begin. But I ask you this. I mean, do you think they feel the threat at all of offer sheets, whether it be Cirelli, whether it be Chernak, or, you know, Sergich? I mean, the list goes on of RFAs they have to sign, and they've been very, very stealth about this whole situation.
Yeah, I'm sure they're trying to stay on the down low very much. And you're right, Julian learned from one of the best when it comes to Yzerman. You know, Steve never talked about anything. He's very quiet. Julian doesn't give anything away either. I mean, it's a smart way to go. I mean, this is a big game of poker, isn't it, for all the GMs around the league right now? There's so many different conditions, and some teams, as we just mentioned, are up against the cap. As far as, you know, offer sheets, I mean, I heard the rumors like you guys did. I kept hearing that Sergachev was going to get this big offer to go back to Montreal, and he would fit in so great there, which, you know, makes sense. And when something makes sense, somebody throws something against the wall, and it sticks for a while. I'm guessing, you know, that teams would look at things like that. Anthony Cirelli's a hell of a player, too. And he played well, even though he was hurt during the playoffs. He's really, you know, jumped up several notches, I think, over the course of this past season. So people will be interested. Chernak is the other guy. Those are the three guys that they would love to re-sign, and that's why Tyler Johnson and at least one other guy with a decently high salary is going to have to go in order to, you know, clear enough room to sign these three guys. Where all that goes, you know, I don't know. I mean, Gord, you know how from your past, more often than not, it looks to all of us when a deal is made that, boy, this happened quickly. Meanwhile, the GMs all know, we've been talking about this for months. You know, things are, possibilities have been out there forever. And then all of a sudden, the timing is right, and you pull the trigger. So I don't think that Julian Brisebois is just now starting to talk about Tyler Johnson and other players. Tyler is a great example. I mean, I'm a big fan. You know, he's a really good player. And really, his ice time was, you know, it wasn't fair to him in some ways. He should be a top six guy, and they moved him around wing, center, mostly wing. So his numbers don't look as good, and that includes the playoffs. But it really was all year. But he's a heck of a player. But right now it doesn't show as well. So that means, again, the buyers have maybe an advantage over Julian right now, and is he going to have to sweeten the pot in order to be able to move him? That's certainly a possibility. And sometimes, you know, another deal comes out of the blue. I mean, look at Andre Palat. Palat's one of our favorites here because we get to see him all season long. 200-foot player, all the stuff that you say about a guy that's sort of a second-layer player that just never does anything wrong and is zero maintenance. You know, everybody loves him. And then all of a sudden you look at the playoffs and you go, wow, Pally, I mean, you were outstanding. A big reason that they won the Stanley Cup. So you think that Julian isn't getting, you know, phone calls about, well, what about Andre Palat? You know, does he want to move him? I highly doubt it. But, you know, these things are complicated. I certainly couldn't appreciate that. And how it all sorts out and who we think will get moved and who actually does get moved may be very different.
You know, Brian, you're right about that, about deals can take a long time in the making, even though they appear instantaneous. But I don't think 31 general managers were really prepared for the pause to hit with the bluntness it did and what they've had to deal with. And so you're looking at it. Whoever thought Henrik Lundqvist would be bought out by the New York Rangers? Zdeno Chara may not be a spot in Boston for him. Joe Thornton has to move. Pietrangelo can't come to terms with the St. Louis Blues. And, you know, more and more examples like that. So I do know they would want to handle it with sensitivity. But as much as Steven Stamkos was the feel-good story, do you think there is talk about, is there a plausible destination that could make it work in a feel-good way?
For Stammer, you mean?
Yes.
No, I don't, to be honest with you. I mean, he is the face of the franchise. I would be totally shocked. I mean, in this game, you never say never. And I guess in 2020 and everything you just mentioned, you know, for sure, you should never say never. But my first instinct is no. He has meant so much to the franchise. They are extremely, you know, loyal to him. He was loyal to them. All that good stuff. I don't see it happening at all. Stammer absolutely loves it here. He said it so many times, and he said it when he signed his deal here. Nothing's changed as far as I can see, Barrett. I don't see him wanting to go, you know, even okay going to somewhere else. But, you know, as I said, it is 2020, isn't it?
Brian, what are your thoughts on the additions they made over the last year to become a more physical team, a more grindy sort of team? There's much contention on Twitter over, you know, whether that actually was the contributing factor to what pushed them over the hump or just a good team finally getting it done. How much do you think the grit they added this year contributed to their Stanley Cup?
100%. 100% contribution. Absolutely, it changed the way they played. Yes, it started in training camp for sure. Look, it goes back not just when they lost to Columbus. For me, it goes back to when they lost to Washington in conference finals. Washington pushed them around, and they knew it. I talked to some of the Capitals this past season, early on in the season. And said, you know, when you beat the Lightning, you know, what did it feel like? You know, just kind of fished around like we do. And they said, by game six, we knew we had them. Just kept pushing, slapped them around a little bit. You know, they played really physical, and we could see it. I mean, I could see it. There were a couple of players on the Lightning who backed up half a step, and that's all it takes, right? And Washington basically was saying to me, we could smell it, we could see it, and we finished them off. Because they didn't quite get to our net. They didn't quite knock us out in front of their net. You know, all those things. So for me, it went back to the Washington series. Then the Columbus situation last year in the playoffs, that was, I mean, the ultimate. I mean, everybody could see that. And for me, it's always this classic case of I get so tired. I understand it. With players and coaches, you know, regular season, every day, well, we just got to play our game. We're just going to play our game. We all get tired of hearing that, right? And during the regular season, you can say that because, you know, you're home to St. Louis one day, you're in Chicago the next, then you're in Winnipeg. So you're playing somebody different. And in the playoffs, it's not about playing your game. You have to be able to play more than one way or you're done. And you can't get a better example than what happened to the Tampa Bay Lightning last year against Columbus. And you think that didn't resonate? I mean, Cooper came into a training camp and said, we are not playing like that. A team that tied the record for most wins, that gets you through the season. Skill gets you through the season because it gets you extra points. And, yes, it defines you as what kind of team you are. But I think a lot of people who watched the Lightning all season missed it was more than a nuance of how they had changed their game. And then when the players that were added, especially at the trade deadline, to beef up, that really solidified it. And then actually what happened with the pause was the new guys got to feel more like they were teammates. Just sheer time. You know, you guys have seen this like I have. You go with the trade deadline, one of the things that you have to worry about is, do you have enough time for these key players to come in and feel like they're part of the team? Where do I fit in? What is my slot? Because GMs make deals to fit guys in. And on paper, it's terrific, isn't it? You dial up a first-line winger. damn it, he doesn't work with our first-line center. Now all of a sudden you're jockeying guys around, and that's what undoes you sometimes. Well, it didn't happen that way, partly because I think of the COVID situation. It allowed them to just really feel. This is a very tight team. They spent a lot of time together, and they had, you know, calls together, and they're on FaceTime and all that kind of stuff. And it was a very important factor of them really coming together and giving them enough time to become a big team. So the changes to be gritty started in training camp. The extra pieces that came in, Coleman and Gaudreau in particular, that was absolutely the lock, and it was 100% reason why they won.
Don't forget they were on the jet skis as well. You're totally right. The chemistry came together, and the Tampa Bay Lightning are the Stanley Cup champion. Brian, thanks so much for your time. This is great.
Do you think that wasn't great advertising for any free agent who wants to come to Tampa if they didn't know before? Guys around the league must have been looking at and going, look at these guys doing. Jeez, it's snowing here or whatever. You know, like, yeah, we've got it pretty good here, guys. Don't tell anybody.
I won't. Thanks so much for your time, Brian. Appreciate this.
Okay, guys. Take care. Thanks.
There you have it. Brian Engblong, Tampa Bay Lightning TV analyst, the Lightning, the 2020, of course, Stanley Cup champions. And it's, Gord, that was an excellent point you made, and you always do in these interviews, but just more so, you know, you get to that summit, you get to celebrate. John Cooper's got his dad jokes, you know, ready to go with the cigar in his mouth. Next thing you know, a couple days later, it looks like a way different roster, right? I think a lot of the character they built up, and again, I think Toronto was very eager and happy to have a guy like Zach Bogosian. Kevin Shattenkirk winds up in Anaheim. They find a way to re-sign Patrick Maroon. But your team looks distinctly different from the one previous a couple weeks before that went all the way. And it sounds like, you know, change is still coming, right? They got to shed about, what, $10 million in cap, and it could be Tyler Johnson the first to go.
Well, yeah, and I just mentioned, like, it's sort of accelerated 2 or 3 weeks. Normally, you get 2 or 3 more weeks to enjoy it before July 1st or thereabouts. And, boy, Tyler Johnson, I mean, here's the quandary. So he's got a $5 million a year for 7 years. He's done 3 years. So he's got a no-trade clause, okay? So the word was he had relented about that. Who knows if he did or didn't. Nobody wants him for 5 minutes. So they put him on waivers. Nobody claims him for nothing. They're saying, bring it on, like Steve Yzerman got Mark Stahl and a second-round pick from the Rangers. Let Tampa Bay offer some things that way. So you're wondering, a team could claim him on waivers, but then if they have to package it now to trade him, does he evoke his no-trade again and say, no, I'm not going to that particular destination? I mean, like, it's a real, real Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, and they gave everybody no movement clauses as well. But again, it feels better, I think, if you're Julian Brisebois, Justin. They won the Stanley Cup, so they got to be happy right now.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering, actually. I was chatting with Mark Lazarus, a Blackhawks beat writer today, just being like, how long do those cups buy you in terms of public goodwill? You know, because there are going to be some years that, you know, some good players get moved out, and so, you know, you maybe don't win at the same rate. So I think it buys you a little bit of time. If things don't go great, if you have to move on from some guys, the fans can't go, well, to heck with this team. It's, you know, in the salary cap era, when you win a Stanley Cup, there are going to be some casualties almost immediately, so this is pretty understandable.
And I feel really good too for John Cooper. Wins that cup, because honestly, like, if they don't win this year, I think he's out of a job. But, you know, just the way we know the NHL world and the coaching carousel to go, he wins the cup, and I think he's got security at least for the next couple of years, no doubt about that. Many thanks to Brian Engblom for stopping by. We'll hit the break other side, where we'll turn our focus to the hated rival, yes, the Boston Bruins, from bostonhockeynow.com. Joe Haggerty up next here. It's Hockey Central with Nick Alberga, Gord Stellick, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, time to look now at the Boston Bruins. Hockey Central continues here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Nick Alberga, Gord Stellick, and Justin Bourne with you. Earlier, we spoke about Tampa and the work ahead for them. Brian Engblom, Tampa Bay Lightning TV analyst, dropped by. And for now, we're happy to bring in, from bostonhockeynow.com, it's Joe Haggerty to talk about the Boston Bruins and their future going forward. Hags, thanks so much for doing this. What's the offseason been like so far with you?
Nick, Gord, Justin, my pleasure. The offseason for the Bruins, it's been quiet. You know, I mean, obviously they were linked to Oliver Ekman-Larsson, one of the two teams he might accept a trade to. And, you know, once free agency started, you heard the Bruins were in the running for Taylor Hall. So headed into the start of NHL free agency, it sure sounded like there was going to be some fireworks. There was going to be something significant for the Bruins in the offseason to improve their team. But I think as we've seen play out, and look, we've seen this a lot around the landscape of the NHL, the salary cap is an issue. And making improvements while retaining your own players and staying under that flat salary cap is an issue. And, you know, I think the Bruins had some grand plans or some things they really wanted to do. I think, but what they're running into now is they're having a hard time moving players with salary somewhere else and freeing up that space to do the things that they had intended to do or hoped to do. And they're kind of in a pattern now, where a holding pattern, where if they want to make a move for somebody, aside from retaining their own restricted free agent, Jake DeBrusk, who's the only really unsigned guy left, if they want to do anything beyond that, they're going to have to move some players in order to make that happen. And there's just not a lot of movement with the GMs and the NHL right now.
So, you know, Joe, you talk to people out there, and I think a lot of it's admiration about the Bruins and hoping to bring them down to earth. So you say, okay, it wasn't very successful in the bubble. Tuukka Rask left. What's going on with Tuukka Rask? Maybe there's no room for Zdeno Chara. They couldn't get Oliver Ekman-Larsson's. You know, they didn't get, you know, Torrey Krug and all the left and on and on and on. And they can't get these pieces. Nobody signed. And you hear all that. Then I have to Google, okay, I have to Google President's Trophy winner for last year. Oh, yeah, it's the Boston Bruins. Like, you know, tell me where you are between these two extremes.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they did win the President's Trophy last year, and you'll hear a lot of Bruins fans lament they were the best team in hockey, and then COVID-19 happened, and then the season went on pause for months, and then they came back in the bubble, and, you know, that kind of messed everything up. I'm somewhere in the middle there because, look, I look at it as this is an aging core. This is a group that's definitely towards the end of their window to potentially make a run and win a cup. Perhaps we'll look back and say that 2019 Stanley Cup final where they lost game 7 on home ice against the St. Louis Blues was their last best chance to win. Because what I see is a Bruins team that's still good, that's still a playoff caliber team. You know, obviously has some roster issues to deal with and some things to address, 5-on-5 scoring against good teams being chief among them. And now they're going to have to fill that hole, like you mentioned, with Torrey Krug signing with the St. Louis Blues. But they're still a playoff team. You know, I think they're still solid, but I'm not sure if they're Stanley Cup winning material. And certainly I think there are big questions if they're going to be able to get past the Tampa Bay Lightning in the playoffs. They've lost them in 5 games twice now in the last 3 years in the postseason. Tampa has a better, younger core group. And, you know, they're having cap issues, obviously, but their best players are still all under 30 and are signed. Braden Point, Victor Hedman, Nikita Kucherov, Vasilevsky. You know, they're still going to be a formidable opponent, and the Bruins still don't have any answers for them. So when you put all that together, I say, yeah, they're still a good team. But we may look back a year or two from now and say the window was already closed at this point for them to win the Stanley Cup, and they probably need to get younger and make some changes if they want to have their next cup run.
Heggs, what's wild to me is, like, the Boston Bruins have been the big bad Bruins. That's when they were successful. And you look at that Tampa team, that's a team that went out and got Bogosian and Shen and Coleman and Goodrow and some guys with some of that grit. And you look at the Bruins roster, and it's not quite the big bad Bruins of old there. How much do you think that sort of a diminishing level of physicality in their game has hurt what the Bruins are?
Yeah, they've gone away pretty consistently since they won in 2011 and had the modern-day Big Bad Bruins approach with Lucic and Sean Thornton and so many tough guys on that roster, Nathan Horton, and, you know, even the smaller guys like Andrew Ferentz would scrap once in a while and had some edge to their game. To go from that to what they have now, which is a much lighter lineup, it's less physical. If you talk about Zdeno Chara potentially not coming back, and obviously he's a free agent, so anything could happen at this point. I still think he may come back, but who knows when he's not signed. You're definitely talking about them being a lot easier to play against, not nearly as big and bad or physical as they used to be. I think that's part of the reason they signed Kevin Miller on October 9th, the first day of free agency, is because they knew they had to bring some physicality and some nasty back into that lineup, and they've definitely missed him over the last year and a half because injuries have kept him out. You know, on the other hand, they're now relying on him potentially to bring all this toughness, and he hasn't played an NHL game in 18 months. You know, it's part of the reason they traded for Nick Ritchie, too, at the trade deadline, is they knew they have to get bigger and more physical, and they're continuing to try to bring players in that are going to provide that. Now, they have a guy in Trent Frederick who, you know, had almost 10 fights in the AHL last year, former first-round pick, led the AHL in penalty minutes, is an up-and-coming guy that might even be on their fourth line this year and might be a homegrown tough guy that brings that snarl and brings that element. No matter where it comes from, they absolutely need more of that. They're getting too easy to play against and too reliant on speed and skill when they still need that physicality, especially in the playoffs. And you hit the nail on the head. Tampa Bay Lightning were more physical than they were in the postseason in that five-game series, and that can't happen again if the Bruins are going to have success in the playoffs.
Chatting Bruins hockey here with Joe Haggerty of BostonHockeyNow.com. It's Nick Alberga, Gord Stellick, and Justin Bourne here on Hockey Central. What happened with Torey Krug, and how shocking, A, was it that he left, and B, that it was St. Louis he ends up going to?
I think the team was a surprise for sure. I mean, you know, there were still thoughts that St. Louis and Petrangelo were going to try to, you know, have a last-ditch effort to make it work. And obviously once Krug signed with St. Louis, that kind of put the final nail in that coffin from happening. So the team was absolutely surprising. St. Louis Blues was definitely surprising to me. Him leaving, not surprising to me at all. I had talked to him frequently throughout the year. He had kept me updated as to what was going on, which is nothing was going on. There was really no discussions. Every signal that the Bruins sent out to Torey Krug was that they really weren't that interested in having him back, that they were kind of moving on to other plans, and they did plan on, you know, Charlie McAvoy and Matt Grzelcyk sort of filling into the roles that he had and, you know, providing some of that offensive production that he brought to the table. He's pretty consistently at around 10 goals and 50 points every year for a defenseman. Those are elite numbers. You know, he's among the best defensemen in the last 3 or 4 years as far as production goes, Torey Krug, so... You know, it was, I think, apparent to him that he was probably going elsewhere. It was not that surprising, but I still think the Bruins are going to miss him a ton. And I think it was probably the right call at the end of the day. He's 29. He's a smaller defenseman. I think he's going to have a hard time staying healthy in his 30s, just given how physical the game is and his size. And I also think at times defensively, teams were able to exploit his lack of size in the defensive zone, and the Bruins know they need to get bigger and stronger and tougher on the back end. They need more players. You know, they play against Tampa Bay Lightning, who seemed like every one of their defensemen was 6'1", 6'2", 200, 210, 220, and the Bruins had two undersized guys in Matt Grzelcyk and Torey Krug on their back end that made them a little too easy to play against at times in the playoffs. So they knew something needed to change. But I think the Bruins are going to miss a ton of the offensive production, the power play ability of Torey Krug. The power play is so essential to everything that the Bruins do for success. And them not having him now quarterbacking that power play and banking on Matt Grzelcyk or Charlie McAvoy stepping in and providing that, that's a big bet that I don't know that they're going to be able to live up to.
Now, Joe, it's always fun revisionist history looking back at drafts. And people in glass houses don't throw stones. I oversaw a draft where Toronto had 3 first-round picks. We took them all from the Belleville Bulls, the same junior team. So, But I look back at that 2015 draft when I don't think it'll ever happen again that a team will have 3 consecutive picks like the Bruins did 13, 14, 15. And you kind of need a little bit of a surprise. And at 12 was Dennis Gurianov, who really came into his own this year in Dallas, you know. And then what makes it tough is 16 was Matt Barzell, then Kyle Connor, Thomas Chabot, Colin White, Samsonov, yep. Brock Besser, Travis Konecny, Jack Roslovic. You get the picture. It was a phenomenal back half of that first round. So Jake DeBrusk is established. I see both other guys have re-upped. Jacob Sporl and Zach Sinishin have re-upped and are playing in the AHL, a little bit in the NHL. It would make it a lot better if one of those two could make the jump. Which of the two do you think has a better chance?
Well, I think Jake Zaboral is going to get his shot this year because he signed a one-way deal. And I think that's the Bruins saying, you know, Torey Krug is gone on the left side. Zdeno Chara potentially gone on the left side. And we need some youth to step up, and we need our younger players to break through. And I think them signing him to a 2-year, 1-way deal, Jacob Zaboral, was the message that, you know, this is the time for your audition. This is the make it or break it moment for you. And we need you to step up and live up to that first round billing. Now, you know, Zboril's been okay in the AHL. I think Zach Sinishin is kind of underwhelmed in the NHL to this point, given his status as a first-round pick as well. And, you know, when, like you said, you just listed off the names, and they were players that were immediately taken after the Bruins made those 3 picks. You know, the Bruins missed their opportunity. They blew their chance in that draft to set themselves up for another 10 years as a Stanley Cup contender year in and year out. And they blew their chance to potentially win another Stanley Cup. If you have Brock Besser, if you have Travis Konecny, if you have Shabbat, if you have, you know, any Matt Barzal for sure, if you have some player like that, an impact player in their prime like that, and you add that to what the Bruins already had on their roster going against the St. Louis Blues in 2019, I think they win. And certainly they're set up if they have another cornerstone player along with Pastrnak and Charlie McAvoy moving forward. They're in better shape even than they are now when they really try to reload and set themselves up for the next decade. So it was a massive failure in that draft. And obviously Jake DeBrusk is a solid player and he panned out. They went 1 out of 3 in that first round. But to see how high quality that first round was, to see all the good players that came after them, and to see two of their players potentially become duds, and we'll find out pretty soon within the year or so if that happens, then you're talking about a massive failure in that draft. And it's something that people in Boston have been wringing their hands about for quite some time.
It's crazy because, like, if two guys pan out and are great players and you're like, not bad, and one guy pans out, it's like massive failure. It's a thin line in that draft, and it really was unfortunate. You know, the question I have for Boston right now is, coming out of that postseason we just had, how are things with Tuukka Rask, not just with, just in every respect, with the fans, how do they feel about it? How do his teammates feel about him, you know, making a decision for his family first? I know there was even talk that, you know, would they trade this guy, and if so, would he retire? Where are things at with Tuukka Rask in general?
Well, for right now, I think the bottom line with Tuukka Rask and the Boston Bruins is that there's no succession plan in place for the Boston Bruins if they were to move on for him. So, and certainly I think, look, it's been twice in 2 years now, once during the regular season and now once during a playoff series, that Tuukka Rask has had to leave the team because he's having difficulty balancing the private life and the professional life. You know, that there's just no ifs, ands, or buts about that. So I'm sure organizationally there's a reevaluation there when that happens a couple times in two straight seasons, and one of them happened during a playoff series. But the bottom line is they don't have anybody that can step in and be Tuukka Rask if they did decide to trade Tuukka Rask, or if they just decided to, you know, have a clean break and make a move elsewhere and, you know, have him have a fresh start somewhere else. And I think that evaluation was pretty simple. Like, we don't have anything in our AHL that's going to be able, anybody that's in the AHL that's going to be able to step up and replace him. And Yaroslav Halak is not ready for that kind of a role at 35 years old. He's just not able to do that anymore. So I think they're going to make it through this year and then reevaluate. And, you know, I've been pretty consistent with Tuukka Rask, where I think he's a different kind of guy. I think he has a lot of other interests besides hockey. I'm not sure hockey is number one for him or has ever been. I think he's got a lot of other interests. And I still feel like he's going to end up retiring sooner than people think he would, even if he's at, you know, the top of his game. So I still think there's some questions about whether he's going to keep playing after this final year of his contract. So they'll answer that question then. But in the short term, I think he's going to be back this year. And I think the Bruins will still be a very good team because their goaltending is so good. Even if they lose players, they're still a playoff team because that goaltending is as good as it is. Does he have some fences to mend with his teammates? I'm not so sure. I think the players that I talked to that played in the Toronto bubble and played, you know, played away from their families for a long period of time, I think it was tough for them. And I don't think they blamed anybody, especially if there was a health issue going on with their family, that they decided to leave and go address that and felt like they needed to be with them. And I think there's an understanding there. And I don't think there's going to be any fences to mend with his teammates. But like I said, organizationally, and, you know, they pay him a lot of money to be their number one goalie and to be there when they need him, that might be a different story.
I know everybody out there hates the Yankees, but it's like deja vu all over again between Tim Thomas and Tuukka Rask. But, you know, I want to ask you lastly for me, is there still interest in Jake Virtanen? I know the two names have been linked between Vancouver and Boston. And what do you see happening here with Jake DeBrusk?
Yeah, I think, look, Jake DeBrusk, it's going to be difficult for the Bruins. They know they're going to have to pay him probably around $4.5 to $5 million. Certainly, I think he's going to get between 4 and 5 a year on his next contract. He's averaged 20 goals in the NHL. He's earned that kind of money. And, you know, I think they viewed going into this offseason that Jake DeBrusk was their best bargaining chip if they wanted to trade him and try to get a young top four defenseman on the left side that could step in based on the losses that they've had. And that still may be the case. And, you know, like I mentioned off the top, I think the landscape of the NHL and teams not wanting to make moves and take on salary because everybody's at a flat cap has made it a lot more difficult in their read of the situation and what they're going to do. They may still eventually trade Jake DeBrusque for another promising young player that better fits their roster needs. I still think that may happen. And there's been a few defensemen that they've been linked to, and young big forwards too. You know, those are both needs that that could help out the Boston Bruins. So we'll see where they go with that. But I've not heard a peep, and I've actually put calls out to DeBrusque's agent to try to get an update on what's going on. It's been very quiet on that front, which I think is interesting.
All right, remains to be seen. Yeah, go ahead, Gord.
Yeah, no, guy, just quick about the balance of power in the Atlantic Division with you got Tampa Bay has to lose players, Boston has to fit in the cap, you got the Enigma teams, Toronto and Florida, and then you got, like, Montreal expects to be in the playoffs. Buffalo, heaven forbid, they might expect to be in the playoffs, and Ottawa's improving.
Yeah, I mean, look, what I've seen in my reading on the Atlantic Division, and this started with Tampa getting grittier and getting bigger and stronger. And you saw it with Montreal, getting Josh Anderson, getting some big, strong players, getting tougher. It's going to be a battle in the Atlantic Division. Everybody's gotten better. I think there's been a focus on strength and size and toughness, and I don't think the Bruins are where they need to be in that category. And certainly, like you know, we said before, they're getting older, and I think they're falling back a little bit. Certainly, they're still behind Tampa, and I don't think they beat Tampa if they play them in the playoffs, you know, unless there's major changes to the Bruins. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Toronto and it, one of those teams, whether it's Florida, whether it's Buffalo, you know, somebody, Montreal, certainly some of those teams are going to push past the Bruins, I think. And I think you're going to see this as the year, the power structure and the world order kind of starts to change with the Atlantic Division. It's going to be fascinating to watch.
All right, Char to the Bruins. Let's do this. Appreciate your time here, Joe.
You got it, boys. Take care.
There's Joe Haggerty of BostonHockeyNow.com. We're tight for time, so hit the final break. Pepsi Center no more. The Colorado Avalanche Arena has a new name. Interesting choice, but there's a backstory behind it. We'll tell you what's up here. It's Hockey Central, Nick Alberga, Gord Stellick, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, pretty much the new arena for the Colorado Avalanche. Pepsi Center is now Ball Arena. It's Nick Alberga, Gord Stellick, and Justin Bourne with you in Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Let me preface by saying I did some due diligence, some background work on why it is called Ball Arena. I'm probably in the minority in this conversation, but I didn't know what Ball Corp did. Did you guys?
Made balls?
No idea.
No. So I kid you. Yeah, like I know this has been the brunt of jokes on Twitter, so I reached out to somebody I know who works with the Avs. Ball Corp creates aluminum cans and mason jars globally. Do you guys know that?
Nah, it's probably balls. Geez, that's a lie.
Yeah, I know. That's what I said. So they started last season by using recyclable cups in the arena. You get a discount if you use the same cup multiple times in one game, and the goal is to reduce trash at the arena by some percentage in the next 5 years. You think I'm kidding, but this is like true stuff. So it's Ball Arena in Colorado, guys. There you go.
So you can at least pour Pepsi into the cup, right? Pepsi Arena no more, but you can pour Pepsi into the ball cup.
Yes, Gord.
Hey, whatever they paid for that naming rights, you just gave them a free ad read. That was
I did.
They're getting their money's worth already. This is great. Yeah.
Speaking of ad reads and just excessive, in my opinion, Justin, we'll start with your thoughts on like 15 jerseys for teams. Like, this is getting ridiculous to me, man. Justin, you there?
I'm still here. Gord's here.
Hey, Gord.
I think Justin, he kind of fainted when he heard 15 jerseys per team. But I'm beyond with you about that. I really am about... whatever the number may be, there's been some neat. I like more if there's kind of a replica, a throwback, a little bit that way. But on and on and on. Let's face it, it's always been a great marketing tool. People rush out to buy them, but I do like the sanctity of the original jersey, and I like that sort of being. You know, we move forward, but still being beholden to your roots.
Justin did not faint. We have Justin Bourne back. Your thoughts, Justin?
I don't even know what we're discussing. I have been absent. I'm sorry.
Oh, no worries. No, we were just talking about, you know, I think it cut out right when I was talking about the fact that every team seems to have like 15 jerseys. Like Vegas has like 4 jerseys now. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, and none of them nice. What a shame. No, I appreciate one-offs, like they're trying to do something yes. kind of cool, original, or different. But no, I'm generally not a fan of it. I like home whites. I like a couple of sweaters. I'm old school in that one department. So
you know,
although Vegas should be allowed to do something weird. They dropped the ball.
Yeah, you know, I gotta say, Brendan Shanahan. One of the things he's really pleased about is a jersey. Like, you know, he thought about it, and then someone said to him, well, you're in charge of the Leafs, you can do it. He goes, oh my God, I can change the jersey. And he brought back a lot of the history and tradition to the Toronto Maple Leaf jersey, and he really takes a lot of pride in doing that, and I liked it.
Yeah, I agree. It is a classic, that Maple Leafs jersey. They're going to do like a reverse retro, right, Justin?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what that'll mean for the Leafs, but it's pretty hard to mess up just blue and just white. You know, they tend to, whatever they put together ends up looking pretty good for the Leafs.
Guys, this is a lot of fun today. Justin, thanks so much for this, bud.
Yeah, thanks, Nick.
There you have it. And Gord, always fun to work with you, my man.
Yeah, three professional broadcasters together. That was great.
Very well put. Many thanks to Brian Engblom and Joe Haggerty for dropping by the program as well. Matt Marchese, Dylan Brown, and Lance Kennedy for keeping this ship afloat. And for Gord Stellick and Justin Bourne, I'm Nick Alberga. Thanks so much for listening. We'll wrap up the week tomorrow here on Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.